Hello, Facebook land.
Hello.
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 Welcome back to a Monday live stream of the Adventure Paradox podcast. It's been a little while since we did a live stream. We had spring break with Easter and all kinds of craziness going on. Today is April 8th. And speaking of craziness, both of us were feeling a little, what is going on? Such an auspicious date. But I'm so happy to have you here with me, Jess. Will you please go ahead and just introduce yourself so that people can get to know you and where you're coming from?
Well, my name is Jess Camila O'Neill. I guess by trade, I have been a singer-songwriter and an actress and a director and an author. I'm also a mother and a wife, cancer healing survivor. You know, I was born and raised in Moran, Wyoming on a ranch. And then now I live over in Du Bois.
Great area of the country. Oh my gosh. Speaking of God's country, right?
Right. So good.
And you have done so much with your life. And I want to unpack all of the incredible things that you just covered because you've accomplished a lot, not to mention your healing story. I definitely want to touch on that. But let's start from the very beginning. As a child, what was it that you lit you up growing up on a ranch? You said, what were some of the things that when you smell those things, see those things, think about those things, bring you back to your childhood?
You know, for me, I've been raised in such nature, you know, so like my parents really allowed the wildness of where we lived to kind of infuse into how we were raised. So I never had a television in the sense of like own channels. We never had a TV growing up. We had movies you could watch, but we weren't focused on, it was like, there was so much going on. I have seven siblings. That was like, everything was outside, you know, everything was focused on that. So to me, nature, 100%, horses, 2, music, 3, just all those are like the pillars of me. Just today, as I was like running around, and honestly, I always had a question. I was like, should we do this today? I'm feeling so weird. But I was like, no, I'm just gonna like, I'm gonna calmly like go through what's happening. But the sandhill cranes have kind of like come back and they're nesting out in the pasture and I can hear them and they were like fighting. And I was like, yeah. And so those kind of sounds and the smells of like the new spring earth. And like, even this is a weird one, like, you know, horse poop when the corrals are like draining and wet horse hair and saddles and leather. And that's like, that's my vibe. If I were to like put a aesthetic and also just a smell to explain it, is just, those are things that take me back to my center and my child.
Yeah. You're speaking my language, my friend.
Right. Right.
Remembering our essential nature. And I think, you know, the adventure that we signed up here for, right? And when I use the word adventure, I'm thinking of, you know, we think of the adventure like climbing the mountain or getting on a young horse for the first time, you know, those really big ones, getting up on stage singing for the first time, right? But sometimes it's a smaller adventure, like just making it to our phone call today.
Exactly. Like all the processes that go through your head of like talking down or talking you through it or talking you to it.
And the paradoxes. I mean, you had some electrical stuff going on. Like it's amazing that we can connect this way through this technology, right? But it's also such a paradox because it can totally disconnect us from all those things you just mentioned. I would love to hear about some paradoxes in your life, like either a first adventure or a journey where it didn't go the way you thought it was going to go. And I know you've got a lot to pull on, but just one that might come into your head as a good one to share right now from the heart.
You know, I've had so many. I feel like that is a really good explanation of my life because I have literally had and led the best life, but also have experienced and lived through the literal deepest of grief and pain and loss. And so my whole story and myself really is that paradox. And sometimes I used to get really upset that I didn't understand why. Why can I experience like these such expansive, beautiful and greatness? And then, you know, just get my butt totally whooped and humbled and down to the bottom of like, whoa, is this real life? And it is. I think that is a common theme that I have had to kind of just, life is a paradox. Mm-hmm. And that there is no great joy without experiencing some great grief. We don't know that depth maybe until we have that through line. I think we do. You know, like, wow, I don't think I could experience such, this is so great. And they're like, until I've experienced like such deep grief and loss, did I realize what a pure moment of even little joy, you know, mm-hmm. and adventure. So an adventure to me is maybe riding like a fresh colt, you know, and you're so excited. Here's this other life that's influencing yours. And there's these true loves. For me, it's like, I love horses. I'm like the weird horse, crazy girl. I'm sure that you are. And probably a lot of your followers, to the point of your deep love is so great. And it's so powerful. And you think that nothing ever could happen or get wrong. So then, you know, you get that first foot in the stirrup and you're like, oh, this is so good. It's so great. And then you lightly just kind of step over and you sink in and everything's going really good. And then snap, something just like happens. So you never know what it could be. And then you're face down in the dirt. And just that like, extreme, the feeling of the difference of those, but also realizing they join together. And that's how you learn. If you didn't have that face down kind of pain in the dirt, you wouldn't realize, okay, well, what did I do wrong here? Maybe it's not even me, but maybe it wasn't, the timing wasn't correct, or maybe the horse wasn't right. And so my whole life has been a very good and 100% complete balance of that, of just like experiencing the excitement and the beauty, and then also experiencing the hard lesson, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a reason that we have an expression, get back on the horse, right?
Woof. Woof.
It's fascinating to me that 100 years ago, 1922, and I talk about this a lot, but that was the year that there were more cars than horses on the streets in most major cities around the world. That wasn't that long ago. That was 100 years ago. But little things that we take for granted, being so close to nature, so close to animals and horses specifically, about how to work with them, read their energy, you know, accidents happen, and have resiliency for getting back on, but also compassion for understanding, oh, that was a plastic bag that just spooked the heck out of you and boom, you know?
Yeah.
Can you go back to maybe one of your first experiences of loss or grief or getting back on the pony?
Well, I remember the greatest times in my life. I was 17 years old. This is a story that I talk about in my book, She Rides Wild Horses. And it was actually from one of the first songs I personally ever wrote. But I had had a severe accident. I was doing an obstacle course and I jumped actually about 22 feet and shattered both my legs and was in a hospital bed for 9 months. Was told I'd never walk again, all these things. It was my senior year of high school. I had just gotten a huge scholarship at one of the most prestigious performing arts schools in the country. And I was so at the peak of your game. Life seemed so tangible and like at your fingertips. And I was just so excited and then have this huge upset, I guess. You're going down one path. You've been groomed for that path your whole life. And then literally jerk the car off the cliff. And I didn't have a clue what I was doing. I was depressed. I'd had this infection in my leg that they thought maybe they were going to have to amputate it. I was down. And I remember my dad came to me and he's like, Jess, I have a surprise for you. And this was in probably about March in Wyoming. Most of our horses, we would take them to winter pasture, so they weren't around. I had to have my legs elevated above my heart. So I'd been in this 6 months solid. And it was very difficult to move me because I had all these like halos and weird joints and screws and things. It was very difficult to move me in and out of the car or even out of the hospital. But he was like, I have a surprise for you. And I really was like, Dad, I don't want to do it. I don't want to go. Whatever you've got planned, don't take me. And he's like, no, I promise you're going to like it. And I was like, okay, fine. So he like loads me up in the car, makes me a bed in the back of the truck. In just the back seat of the truck because I have to be flat, and drives me to our ranch. And in the wintertime, you can't access our ranch by car. You had to snowmobile in. Makes me a bed in the back of the snowmobile trailer, bundles me up and drives me in. And there at the corral was my horse, Marilyn. And she was the most beautiful horse. She was a bay paint Arabian quarter horse cross. She was the first horse I ever trained by myself. She was kind of wild. And everywhere we went, everybody was like, can I buy her? She was just like Marilyn Monroe. She just like had this wild. And I remember seeing her standing there and she was winning because it was like all by herself. And I just started crying because I was like, oh, yeah, I love horses. That's why I really love them, you know? And I didn't know what my dad had planned, but he's like, I think it's time for you to ride. And I was scared because I had all these huge halos on each side of my legs. And I was like, Dad, I don't know if you know. He's like, it's okay. I got you. So he carries me over there. It's like deep snow. It's like 4 feet of snow and throws me up on the back. It's all very painful. And as soon as I straddled the horse, I can't tell you the feeling that I experienced because I hadn't been upright. I hadn't been like tall. I actually think it was more like 6 or 7 months. So I hadn't had that feeling of being tall. I just was like, oh yeah, I think I'm going to be okay. No matter what happens, they cut my leg off. I don't get better. I'm still in a wheelchair. Like, I think I'm going to be okay. And it was a very, very specific moment that I take myself back to and or like in times where I'm like, things are rough right now. I just like let myself go back to that moment of pure clarity of sometimes we can't dig ourselves out of what we're in. And it's just those like pure loves of our heart. My dad, my horse, very simplistic, you know, riding, the smells of just getting me to be like, oh yeah, this is who I am. And this is what I love. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be okay. And so to me, that is one of my favorite memories of myself of like getting back up on the horse, because it literally was the moment that spurred so much of my healing. And literally, so I'd had this horrible infection in my leg that they were going to amputate. And it cleared up 2 weeks later. I just felt like it was the instantaneous moment of healing for me. And then I was walking and I hadn't walked it, like not even close. Mind you, the walking was like with bars and like two physical therapists, but about 4 months after that, like starting to. And I really do attribute it to that moment in time where I was like, I felt it. I felt it on a cellular level. Oh, I'm going to be okay. This is going to be okay.
Yeah. Jess, that's such a beautiful story. There are so many things I'm hearing in that story. Thank you for sharing it with us. I think for me, one of the most profound is being on a horse and feeling that energetic healing, that it's going to be okay, especially when we're coming from a place where we're really not okay. You know, you had a lot of physical things going on, a lot of fears about whether or not you'd ever walk again with two legs or one leg or what it would look like, what your life would look like. And I'm sure there are people listening right now who need to hear it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
No matter how it turns out, it is going to be okay. And essentially, that's a message of resilience. But the other thing I hear in this story is your father. And sometimes we need someone to see us and know us and love us enough to say, I am going to make you a bed in the back of the snowmobile trailer and get you out there.
Right? You kind of like, you need somebody when it sucks a little bit, like when you're in your own darkness or your storm. You need that person to sometimes pull you out of the center of the eye of the storm and be like, you know, like if you can't remember, I can remember for you, like who you are. And I remember what lights you up. I remember what you love and what you are of. And I'm so grateful for my dad that he did that. And he knew that for me.
Is he still around?
No, my dad passed away in 2007, unfortunately.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, another just like.
Yeah, whew. In spirit always though, right there then, right?
Always. And better, actually. In spirit, he's really strong. I feel him a lot. Like the Sandhill Cranes, that is such a memory for me. Because he would love with the dude ranch, you know, it's like you get everything ready about April, May, you get the horses back. And I just remember the call of the Sandhill Cranes would be like, okay, yeah, it's time to bring the horses home. So I've been really thinking about him in the spring always, because it's like, okay, we got stuff to do. We got to get ready.
So I want to talk a little about dude ranches, because this is another favorite topic. But first, that quote that's coming to mind is a friend is someone who knows the song in your heart and can sing it back to you when you have forgotten.
Wow.
Oof. Such a good one. I don't know who said that, but it's...
I don't even know that I've really heard that before, but I'm dumbfounded and that's going to be a motto
It's a good one. And I love singing. And my friends who know me well know that my voicemail is usually a singing voicemail, which is why everybody can memorize my phone number. So anyway, I'm not putting that out here right now. You'll have to get to know me personally. But I do think if we have a message, a song in our heart, something that we like to sing, and, you know, I did a video the other day where I was like, why sing in the shower when you can sing on horseback, or you can sing while you're skiing, or just sing the song in your heart. And April Fool's, I was skiing at Jackson Hole Mountain Resort's Gaper Day, right? So everybody's all dressed up, and there were a bunch of snowboarders, and they were dressed up as nuns. So I'm like skiing by them, like, the hills are alive.
With the sound of music. Oh. And they're all, who dat lady?
I'd love to hear just the life cycle of a dude ranch, but maybe bringing some of the energy of music into it. Because again, so many people, they've lost the connection to horses. They're living deep, deep, deep in the city. They've lost the connection to the land. They've lost the connection to the life cycle of when the cranes come, or when the snow begins to melt and then it comes again. But I'd love to hear the song in your heart around the cycle of dude ranching.
I think dude ranching and the history of it is a really incredible story. Ultimately, it came about because people had these huge ranches. And then during the Depression, economy was so rough. They're like, man, they can't make it work. Can't make it happen. The cows aren't selling big or whatever, the taxes, who knows, you know, it could have been something. And so then the wealthy people from out east were going and staying at their friends' places all summer for free anyways. And so it was like, somebody was like, yeah, okay. You have to pay me to stay here now. You can help and you can do these things. I love that history because, there's always been this allure and this romanticism of the Western and cowboy life, right? It's just such a iconic, beautiful romance story. And what I love about dude ranches, I think we're in a really big season of what that looks like. I think we're really actually coming out of that right now, which is also a little like sad, but you know, things are always changing. But growing up for me, love being raised on a dude ranch is literally every child's miraculous dream, because you are running wild. You get a new friend every week because all these people bring their families and their kids. And for me, I was just on my horse every day, all day long, like running around, riding to my friend's house in Moran. Most of them live more than 5 miles away. Just like take your horse to their place. And you have these big seasons. And plus you have the employees that come to work there too. So you have like, it's industrious. That's the feeling. And then it's almost like showmanship, because you have this Western life but it's really for these people that are coming to experience it, even though it's your real life, but there is this element of showmanship. So to make sure these people have a good time and that they're experiencing this part of the country. What the beautiful thing about it, I think, was how my family saw it, I guess. So I was from such a huge family that my parents were kind of like, you know, what would we like on vacation? So my parents were kind of the first ones to ever start like a kids program and a kids wrangler program, because they had so many kids. They were like, yeah, you want to go on vacation, keep your kids busy. How are you going to keep 8 kids busy? Well, this would be cool. Like, what if, you know, you do these things and the kids can be doing that and the adults can be doing this. And then you come together because you don't want to go on vacation and not see each other. There's such a place in my heart for it. My grandparents, who were amazing human beings, they took the first course at University of Wyoming on dude ranching in the 1940s. They were like the ultimate, went to school for it. And so it's very deep and rich in my generation and my history. And it like kind of makes me a little sad that it's not, that it's part of my life a little, but I do go seeing at dude ranches, which feels like enough for me to kind of like dip my toes in still, because it's really hard work. Like,
yeah,
it is.
Yeah. A lot of work.
A restaurant, you're running a horse corral, you're running a hotel, you're running like a shuttle service. This is so much to it. Yeah. So it's just a ton of work, but literally the most fun as a child that you can have, because you're just really wild and free, and every component of the outdoors and horses and friends and just community and celebrating that kind of like a ranching agricultural lifestyle.
Absolutely. So just for the record, you're a third generation dude rancher.
Yes.
Even though you're not.
I'm not doing
ranch. Yeah.
You know, yeah. My little brother has a ranch but he runs it different than even a dude ranch, which I'm saying, like, I think it's the whole idea of how it came to be is really shifting.
So beautiful. And I want to talk a little bit about the shifting because I have a hunch about what you might be referring to. But first of all, what was the name of the dude ranch you grew up on?
I grew up on a Heart Six Ranch, which is in Moran. And then we sold that and bought Triangle C Ranch, which is over in Dubois, when I was in mid high school. And then my family owned that just up until I think we sold it in 2017 or 18, maybe. I can't remember.
Yeah. You've got a long history on the inside of the ins and outs of dude. I mean, we could do a whole thing on this. I actually interviewed Gene Kilgore. I don't know.
He's a home.
But yeah, such is the love. So we love talking about dude ranches and just getting people out to them because I think so many people, the healing they seek, everything they're looking for is there.
Yeah.
But it is interesting on the dude ranching side of things. And I interviewed Byard Fox too. You probably know from Bitterroot right after his book came out last year. So, I want to talk a little about your book, but first just keeping an eye on time here. First, you said you feel like it's changing a little bit, this attraction to dude ranching. Are you referring to some of the Yellowstone? And I'm talking about the series right now, not the park. And also, I remember seeing the Queen of England wearing a cowboy hat and a lot of people getting really upset about it and saying, you know, she can't just do that. And then other people saying, and this is the camp I'm in, is I'm so glad she's wearing a cowboy hat because to me, it's keeping the spirit alive. It doesn't mean that she has any idea what she's doing. And that's not what it's about. It's about that freedom, that essence, you know, what it symbolizes. But I would love to hear what are you thinking when you sort of say you feel like it's changing a little bit in terms of people's attraction to dude ranches or sort of the culture of the West right now?
Well, I think, you know, for me, like I am a little bit still, like I see things because I still go and perform at like some of the dune ranches here, like if they have an event or there's a couple that I do weekly during the summer, just because I love it so much. And I see is like historically, you know, people were either dude ranch vacationers, which like they would go and try a different one every year. And then you have your other like traditional families that they've been to one, they've their kids went, now the kids go back and they take their kids. And so, and then sometimes there's like this random midlife crisis of like, let's go do a different vacation. They go to a dude ranch. But for me, what I see is like, we're coming out of that era of, well, we took our kids to that and the kids maybe take their kids aren't interested in doing that. They're like, eh, it's not that cool. That, you know, I did that. We did that my whole life. I don't really care to my kids to have that. You know what I mean? So I see that a little bit. And then also I just see like, it's too slow. Is like too slow for people. They don't know how, first of all, plan that much ahead out of their life. Like, okay, you know, the bookings are so much later now. You'd be booked, like you would have your whole ranch booked by January. It's like right after Christmas, everybody got together. What are we doing this summer? They booked their vacation. Now it's like, man, you could probably call up any dude ranch right now and pick the busiest week of the summer and probably find a spot. So I mean, I'm just talking.
Yep, real talk.
I think that's probably what's happening. I don't know that for sure. So I think, you know, whatever the era that I feel like it happened about during COVID, maybe when people just don't want to be by other people. They got used to not being by, they don't want to vacation by, you know. So if anything, it'll be like Airbnb dude ranching, where it's like, I don't get my cabin, but I don't want to eat with those people. And I don't want to, I feel like that. It feels that way.
Airbnb dude ranching. Whoa.
I coined it here, people.
You coined it. Yep. You coined
it. Missions. I expect the trademark.
Well, and I have seen on Airbnb, you know, they have these things called experiences, right?
Yeah.
And there was one gal outside of the Grand Canyon. She had like 7 or 8 horses or something. And it was like, you can pet the horses and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, what other options can we do with your horses? And what if I brought my own? Do you have extra pasture? You know, can we keep them somewhere? And it was really interesting to have the experience of sort of where you are and horse people. We know what we're talking about then. Like, how big is your trailer? Can I get it in or out? Tell me about your horses. Do you have Coggins? You know, those kinds of things. But it is really interesting when you're talking to non-horse people, and a lot of Airbnb folks, like, they have no idea. So she was like, no, I don't let anyone do anything but feed them carrots with me, you know? And I'm like, I totally understand. It's a liability, you know? I mean,
it's huge.
So much overhead, you know, it is sad to me to hear. And I've gotten this vibe from quite a few dude ranchers, some of whom have been on the show and some of whom have spoken to me privately, but that things are changing. And so this is where I think about the future and the future of horses, the future of these beautiful ranches and all of these guest cabins and the needs of humanity, where we're in such an instant gratification. I want it now. Let me order it on Amazon. I don't even have to go out and do anything. You know, food comes from a grocery store. You know, like, I send my dog to a dog trainer. I don't know how to work with, you know, it's really interesting what is lost when we forget how to slow down and do the real work of just being ourselves and then being in nature and being with animals. Whoa.
Yeah.
Right. That's all right. I don't know if there's anything else you want to say on that, but then
I think just about the dude ranch thing, it is a little like it's a turning of time and history for some of us that were raised like that. You know, you look at Jackson Hole recently in the last couple of years. I don't want to misspeak, but I don't think there's very many dude ranches left. They've all been sold to private entities. I'm so grateful for the ones that are still hanging on, but I also don't, you know, blame them for like doing what they got to do. And just because it's just so interesting. And it's what we're all doing in every generation of watching the changeover, you know, it's what is trying to stay ahead of the curve enough to be like where you don't become like the old bitter person that's like, why did I do that? But it's easy to do that for me because I'm like, what happened? What's happening? You know, especially these such where I think dude ranching is a vacation that will actually change people's lives, especially family. You know, I think, you know, you find these people that have never had an experience like that, but they're feeling in a pretty safe environment, but experiencing extreme wildness and greatness. And then, you know, and then that's why they come back year after year after year. So it would be to me a shame, you know, to see that kind of like way of life disappear or shift too much. Like I know shifting happens, but shifting too much, it would be a shame too.
Yeah.
I don't know.
More will be revealed in time, right? I do feel like those of us who love it and are passionate about it, making sure people hear and understand why and that they might be so inspired to come and have their own experience, you know, especially if, I mean, the number of people I led on horse retreats who had never touched a horse, breathed in manure, had any idea what hay was or a flake of hay, you know? And then when they touched a horse and got on a horse bareback and just felt energetically and they just started to cry, you know, and just realizing, you know, all of these issues that we're having, anxiety, depression, all this mental illness crisis.
Yeah.
And where and what is possible if we're connecting more with animals, specifically horses, you know, the healing available there. I think you talk about this a bit in your book, and you have a couple books. So let's make sure that we know which one you're talking about. Cause I love the story that you told. You said that's from Wild Horses.
Yeah. This is a book. She rides wild horses. I don't know if you can see it.
What's the
rugged real life story of an unbreakable woman.
I love it. And I would love to ask, because we've been interviewing people from the Mustang Summit. Are you talking about actual wild horses off the range, or is this more metaphorical?
I mean, yes and yes.
Perfect. We're in good company.
Wild horses and yes, metaphorically wild horses. So this book is actually getting old now. I was thinking about this. Like, did it happen in 2019? This came out anyways, a memoir about my life and about that, a lot about the accident that I explained a little bit in just now. I look at it now and I'm like, wow, I guess I had to write that because a lot was coming. I had to have like space to gather what was coming next in my life. She Rides Wild Horses. I'm so proud of this book. Like everybody in their life is like, well, I'm going to write a book. And then you're like, who 1% does it or something? For me to accomplish it, I'm just proud of that because it was a very big feat. And yeah. Also, I learned so much, you know, like right now you just like, I see music like this, you know, you write a song, you sing it out in public, then you go into the studio, you record it. And as an artist or something, you could nitpick something and never let it out into the world. You'd be like, you're a perfectionist. You can't really be an artist. You have to allow the space and the fumbling and the failure and the perfection or whatever, you know, and how you have to let that breathe. And you just, at some point you have to let it go. And so this part of my life and this part of my story, I had to kind of like let go because there was big things coming for me. So at like almost a year after I released this book, I got diagnosed with stage 3 metastatic breast cancer. And
Hold on. I want to get to that story, but first, because it's a really important one.
Yes.
Will you tell us about when you started writing this book? Because I feel like for a lot of people, they have that seed. I'm going to write a book. You know, for a long time, I was like, I took that big horse road trip. I said I was going to write a book about it. I couldn't even talk about it for a year, pretty much. You know what I mean? It was a lot of traumatic things that happened, right? I would love to hear how you started. Like, how did you start to put it together or realize this book is coming? You know, I say like, you're birthing your book baby, you know, like when did you really become impregnated with, I'm not just talking about it anymore. Like this book is coming through.
Well, writing for me, you know, because being a songwriter is natural for me to emote through words and to express and to feel, right? And to put myself out there in that manner. So She Rides Wild Horses actually is one of the very first songs that I wrote and recorded from so I was 17 when I wrote that song, all during that time when I was telling about a story. I loved that hook, She Rides Wild Horses. It was such a beautiful hook to me. And that song was such a deep expression of that time in my life with, you know, not being in a
hospital. Can you sing us a line or give us a...
She rides wild horses for fun. Don't want to tame them or break them. She just wants to be one with wind, with the sky. She can't help but feel free and wild. She can't help but feel free and wild. So just like,
awesome.
All right. I love one of my favorite songs. And, you know, it did really well for me. And it felt like that was a 3-minute version of the book that I wanted to write. And so I really started just kind of writing chapters. And then I started going to like book writing seminars. And I immersed myself around other authors, people that wanted to write a book, people. And I'm kind of like a master manifester in real life. Like I see how where I plant the seed. And that is something that has always been good for me. I'll attract people that are on that same path, or then they'll be like, hey, did you hear about this clinic or this book writing? I'm like, great. That seems opportunity to me. I'm going to take it. And so I started doing that. And some people just came into my life. They were writing books. They were getting a book coach. They were doing that. And so I'm like, okay, I see the map, right? Like other people are doing this. And then, so I did that same thing. So I had gone to some seminars. I had seen some other people and some friends of mine, you know, finish their books, write them, get them out there. And then, you know, for me, the key was getting a book writing coach, somebody who keeps you on track, someone who, you know, you turn in your chapters and then your manuscripts and all these things, and they kind of coach you from start to finish. And that's, I'm a very accountable person. So like, if you were to say, hey, I need you to do this, I'll do it. I'm really good at that. And I like that. I like that about sports. I like that about horses, you know, they keep you accountable, or like, I'm just good like that. So if somebody says, hey, you need to do this, I'll get it done, you know? And I'm accountable to myself too. So that was a good process. I can see how if you're not that type of a human, it could be really difficult. You know, it can be really arduous, humbling, you know, and it's scary to put yourself out there. It's scary. You know,
terrifying.
I I rewrote my book 17 times.
Oh, yeah. I'm right there with you. I actually coined the word in my book, excitifying. Little of this, little of that.
Right?
Yeah. And big so feelings.
It's so, you know, the thing is, it, just like with life or just like with writing a book, like if you want to do it, if you want it enough, you'll do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you'll get over whatever it is, the block that's in the way. You know, I'm not some prolific, beautiful writer. I write well enough. I paint pictures enough with words through song that I can probably lengthen it out into a paragraph, you know, and you get over your own kind of like your head games.
Yeah, totally. And they are all head games.
They're head games, man.
They're all head games. Yeah. Wow.
And they're big.
They can be really big. So we actually have an author's week coming up on the podcast. Oh, so more and more people are going to be watching this and thinking about writing books. If someone out there is wanting to, I mean, one of the things I heard you say is basically what we were talking about earlier in this interview, which is find someone who knows the way and can help you get there and sees the song in your heart saying, I'm getting this book out. Like, help me get this book out. I mean, the friends who showed up for me along the way when I reached out and said, listen, you published a book. How did you do this thing? Will you help me out? What can we do to get this out? You know, amazing. Such a gift.
The key word is ask, you know, just ask and you shall receive. Like if you don't know how, somebody else does.
Yeah, totally.
And someone else will. And if they don't know how, they might turn you on to somebody who does. And you just immerse yourself in the world of, we have so much accessibility to information nowadays, you know, that makes it so easy. You know, it makes it so easy for us to do things. So even like, you know, grammar on your computer, it's like you can edit yourself as you go before you even turn it into your editor. And like, they just, we're in a time of technology to where you literally have no excuse.
Yeah. Anything is possible.
Anything is possible if you do it. It's so possible.
All right. Speaking of possible, let's talk about those paradoxes. The moment you got the call or you understood something was going on in your body, let's talk about your cancer diagnosis and that story. Will you just take us through it?
Yeah. So what the interesting thing was, when this book came out, I wasn't feeling well. Like I was trying really hard in life, like so hard. And I was a tough cowgirl. So that to me looks a lot different than to other people. That's okay. But it's just how I was raised. You know, it's just like, you know, you get back on that horse, you just keep going, you're tough as you're just tough. And so it served me well in my life. And it's also been something that I've really had to let go of. So, you know, I was at the peak of success. I just had an award-winning album. I had this international best-selling book. And like, I was like, everything should be so good, but I don't feel good. Like, but I'm eating right. I mean, you know, I'm working out. I'm working so hard. I'm doing things. And I just couldn't really like put it together. Now I have had to manage chronic pain because of this accident that I had since I was 17. So I've been managing chronic pain for so long that sometimes you become numb to what might be else out there. And so I wish I would have listened to myself more openly and honestly and not been so tough, because there were some signs of like, you're not, something's off, you know? And you just don't expect that. I think I was 38 when that kind of started happening, and you just don't expect like cancer in there, you know, like you're not thinking that way. Even when you go to the doctor, they're like, well, you're too young. We don't do mammograms. So you're 40. So don't worry about it. This is no big deal. And I did have like a weird indention in my breast when I would go to do my hair or like blow dry my hair. And it would look like somebody had pulled a string across it. It was like invisible string, like an indention. And so to me, I was like, okay, breastfeeding, you lose weight, you know, you gain weight, your boobs change, like so many things. Right. And so I wasn't even like worried about it. And even though I did go to the doctor, then COVID happens, you know, try to get a mammogram. They're like, sorry, we're not, you know, nobody's doing those right now. So kept putting it off. And then I had decided to go to, my friend had gone to a clinic down in Mexico for stem cell, which I was doing for my legs because of for help with pain. And so I go down to this, I'm by myself, I go to Mexico, it's during COVID, it's like hard to travel, like, you know, it's just kind of like crazy. And I get down there and they're like, well, have you had a mammogram? I had just turned 40. And I was like, no, you know, I haven't been able to get in. And they're like, okay, no, you know, like, let's do an ultrasound right now. So we're doing an ultrasound and all of a sudden, like, the doctor who's doing the ultrasound gets like, I've been in enough hospitals and I've been in enough like scenarios to where I'm like, he's writing things down a lot and he's taking a lot of pictures and this just doesn't feel right. And it's taking a long time. And he was going over the same spot and the same spot and the same spot. And so finally I was like, yeah, is everything okay? And he's like, you know, we're seeing, there's some weird imagery here. Like we need to check it, you know? So I'm, you know, in another country by myself, it's hard to travel. And I had paid for this package of this week down in Mexico and they stopped all my treatments. They're like, we can't do anything until we figure out like what's happening. So I'm just like hanging out there, just like, doop-doop. And I, my deepest self, I knew like it was up. You know, I just didn't want to. So I had this time to like sit and reflect. It's this beautiful clinic right on the ocean. And I would walk every morning and swim. And I knew what was coming. It was almost like I'd had a lot of experiences like this before, where it's like, I say this is funny. It's like, I think it's a John Wayne quote, but I'm not actually sure if it is his, but it's like, you know, courage means you're scared, but you're going to saddle up anyways.
Yeah.
Being scared and saddling up anyways. And that I've done that so many times in my life. I knew exactly how to like saddle up. Right. So I was like, okay, something big's coming and I can feel the angst and the energy and like the depth of what I'm about to face, where you're like, I can imagine in ancient times or things when men are like going into war and you can hear the like warring, you know, soldiers from the other side and you're getting ready. It felt like I've had several times in my life where I'm like, okay, I'm preparing myself for something really big. And so finally they say, can anybody come down here and be with you? And I was like, yeah, let me see if I can, you know, get my husband. They wouldn't tell me anything. They kind of like avoided me until my husband came down. So then I like really knew. They could ask me, they're like, when's your husband coming? But we couldn't get any flights down into Mexico or to get across. And then something was up with his passport, you know, and finally he gets there. And then the moment he gets there, they like, can you come in and speak with us? And so, yeah. And then you're sitting in this room and you have the doctor cross and it's like every movie scene you've ever seen when they're like, yeah, I'm sorry to tell you that, you know, you have cancer. And I had had time to like prepare and I knew that something, you know, what else is up in your breast? You know, there's not that many things that can be there. So I knew it was happening. And I just remember him saying, you know, your blood type is B positive and you have this HER2 positive cancer. It's the rarest form. It's the most aggressive. We need to get on this right now. We need to do this. And I just like B positive, like it stopped me in my tracks. I was like, oh, I am made of B positive blood. I am made of that. That is the structure of my entire being. And I just was like, yeah, we're doing this. Let's do this. This, you know, what do we got to do? And I dug, you know, I'm a very studious. I like to, when something, you know, I like to dive deep. I like to understand the things coming at me. And you know, for me, I was like, I'm a pretty natural person and I kind of wanted to do that, but the type of cancer that I had, not many women live past 3 years. And so I was like, man, I just got to make some really hard decisions right now. And so those were humbling decisions, you know, to be like somebody that had been like, oh, I'll never do chemotherapy. You're like, I'll never, and you're like, yeah, I probably will.
Yeah,
I'm probably gonna. And those were humble. It was a beautiful, I look back now and like, I loved learning that about myself, even though that was literally the worst. Like, I literally thought like I had been through some depth and some really hard things. And don't get me wrong, cancer is so hard and so everything that you think about it, but it's actually really beautiful. you know, because if you allow it, the club, it really sucks, the cancer club, but some of the most beautiful people are in it, and you're having these transitions and you're learning so much about yourself. And I said this the other day, it was like, you know, some of the most alive people I know are dying of cancer.
Yeah.
And it's because you have this, we all have the same like destination, right? We know that we will be born and we will die. And that is the only like sure thing we know here. The beauty of cancer is like, you might have a sooner date than that. So you maybe reflect a little more, you know, and you have hard conversations with people that maybe you never have because you never have them because I, you know, unexpectedly or something, you know. So I have two of those examples in my life where my father passed away very randomly and quickly. And then my father-in-law passed away long, also from, you know, from cancer. And like, I saw these reflections. And for me, it was like, this is a time to like really dig deep and figure out what my life really is. And to just figure out what healing looks like for me.
Yeah.
And you know, it was, I'm just, you know, just now I'm feeling like, okay, I'm gonna got my feet up under me again. You know, I had a scare like just 2 months ago. So it's like, you just get your ass handed to you a lot with cancer. It's like, you learn how to deal with a lot. And it's also like, that's okay. Learning how to deal with disappointment is actually a really powerful thing. You know,
are you clear now?
You know, they, so interesting about cancer is they don't tell you you're in remission, at least the type that I had, for 10 years.
So you're always kind of on the, wow.
I mean, for me, I feel like I don't have cancer in my body. You know, like I felt an energetic shift. I've gone, like, I can feel it for me a little bit. I have enough of a relationship, which is interesting why I did feel something, went back in, they cut it out, I'm okay again. But like, it is like a weird sensation for me. I don't, you know, that's very different for everybody. So in this moment, in this time, and in this conversation, there is no detectable sign of disease in my body, which is amazing, right?
Hallelujah.
And, yeah.
Let me just say, I am feeling that people are probably watching this and someone is watching it or hearing it, and either they themselves or someone they know is maybe going through a diagnosis right now. You used the word disappointment, working through disappointment. Any other words that you would give to someone who is on a cancer healing journey right now?
It's going to be okay. You know, like we talked about that before, and I have a lot of friends in the cancer community, because as I was saying, like, it's filled with the most amazing people. And I've been having a lot of discussions with some women lately, and it's like, there's no shame in dying of cancer. You know, we put all this like pressure on cancer and people with cancer, and there's a lot of shame, there's a lot of guilt, there's a lot of victimhood in it. And it's like, don't do that.
Yeah.
Cancer does not discriminate. The most healthy people, you know, like, was eating organic, gluten-free, you know, elk meat only, like what, you know, all the things, working 7 times a week. Like, it doesn't discriminate. I still got cancer.
Yeah.
And there is like this shame, especially in like the health community of like, you know, well, I, you know, I'm not, look at them, they got cancer, so I don't have to worry about that. And it's just life, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And there is no, like, we don't shame people who die in a car wreck. Like, what a, whoa, that was so, like, it's sad when people die.
Period.
It sucks. Yeah. You know what's more sad? When people don't live while they're here.
There it is. There it is. Oh, you know what? I'm so sad to do this, but I do actually have another interview. So okay. I feel like that is a great ender, a little bit abrupt, but you know, if we could have a rally cry, just remember, guys, live your life.
Live it here,
right now. Thank you so much for coming on the Adventure Paradox. I could talk to you for hours. I can't wait to catch up with you in person.
Let's do it again and let's hang out.
Let's do it again. All right. We'll be in touch. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Have a beautiful rest of your eclipse day, and we'll be in touch. I'll let you know when it's going to drop. Thank you. Yeah. Bye.